championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Pazer. And today, Joe Cook will not be joining me as he is incredibly busy doing all sorts of stuff. But we will still be talking about Texas Tech and what Texas will be facing in Lubbock this Saturday. So, to do that, I will be bringing on a special guest in Jeremy Gilland from Viva the Matadors over on SB Nation. Let's get right into it. So now we're going to bring on Jeremy Gilland, editor and Twitter dude for Viva the Matadors, the Texas Tech blog for SB Nation. Jeremy, how you doing, man? You're over in Mississippi State now, right, for getting your PhD, though?
That's correct. Last time you had me on, I was in Lubbock. Now I've made my way too far away from Lubbock, over in Starkville or Stark Vegas, Mississippi, being embroiled in a whole new culture of football, but, you know, sticking to my roots.
Still breaking down and watching religiously the Red Raiders, though, over there.
Still very much into self-hurt, still watching the Red Raiders, still being disappointed.
Eating
and
tortillas.
Embroiled all at the same time. Eating tortillas. Never stops, man.
You bring a tortilla instead of your cowbell.
Well, what I do is, I didn't go to state games at all, but what I'll do is I'll get some tortillas. I'll sit in front of the TV, kick off. I'll throw a tortilla at the TV, mm-hmm. You know, touchdown, throwing tortillas at the TV. It gets kind of messy, but it's worth it. I mean, it's the way of life.
You don't pick them up. They're just there.
Oh, they're still there. Yeah, they're just hanging out.
That's pretty normal life for a Texas Tech fan, right?
Yeah, it's about the average. Anything less than you kind of question if you're really a fan at all.
That's true. That's very true. But let's go ahead and talk about Texas Tech fans and the relationship with Ryan Gosling, the coach of the Texas Tech Raiders, has kind of been on the hot seat in the past few years. However, now he's kind of doing all right for himself. You know, he's not winning any major awards, but he is keeping Texas Tech quite in the race for the Big 12. They're 3-3. But anything can happen right now. It's kind of chaos in the Big 12. Texas is definitely hoping for some chaos after the past 2 weeks. So what is Texas Tech's feelings about their head coach right now? Because last year, he beat Texas to save his job.
So a disclaimer, anything I say now, I'll probably 5 minutes down the road be upset with, because it's a difficult environment with that question. I mean, yeah, last year, the Texas win was kind of like the saving grace of his job and then solidified him for especially this year, kind of like gave our athletic director that belief that he was the right guy for the job. And despite an Ole Miss loss, you know, to open the season, a very disappointing loss coming off, you know, kind of a high expectation with the defense coming back and, you know, lots of quarterback options and losing to Ole Miss was had all of them coming out against Kingsbury again. And then his wins against Lamar was, you know, you should win those games, made sense. Then we won against Houston. And there was a little bit more of a momentum there that holding Houston or doing so well against Houston per our standards was somewhat showing. But then the next game against Oklahoma State was incredibly important. You know, Oklahoma State had kind of had our number for a while now. If I'm not mistaken, it was 9 years running or something like that, trying to get into the double digits against Tech. Kingsbury and especially David Gibbs dialing up a defense that kept, at the time, a prolific quarterback. It's kind of fluctuated since then. You know, holding them 40-whatever to 17 was, you know, what got people back on this Cliff Kingsbury train. People were blown away by that performance. And then following up with that, the West Virginia game was a really tough one, but losing Alan Bowman halfway or like towards the end of that, or it was the second quarter, losing Alan Bowman and trying to make an effort with Jet Duffy, two very different quarterbacks, prolific in their own ways, but if you're looking for Duffy to be the prolific passer that Bowman is, you're not going to find it. So almost coming back in that game, people had faith, like, okay, at least Kingsbury's operating in a manner that's kind of adjusting with the environment that he has to deal with or the situation, the continually changing situations. Then we had TCU. That was a defensive struggle. A lot more went on to Gibbs with that. But since we had Jet Duffy starting the whole time, his ability to operate the offense and for Coach Kingsbury to call plays that kind of kept us in the lead. It's a weird season where Kingsbury's been coaching better, but maybe not necessarily. I don't know. I'll put it this way. If this kind of happened last year, I think he would have been gone. Maybe this year's a little different since our defense has helped us stay in games. And since I think a lot of people are resting on, you know, Bowman's getting hurt, Carter's getting hurt. You know, the fact that he's had to deal with so many injuries, his ability to kind of operate around that has saved him. But especially with this Oklahoma game, people are questioning, okay, did he make the right choice putting Bowman back in? There's two camps there that people are starting to distrust Kingsbury. He's trying to, like, maybe he's trying to hurt players, or maybe he's willing to hurt players.
Trying to hurt players?
No. Maybe he's willing to hurt players in order to save his job, even though I think that's totally bogus. But there's a lot of different ways you can break down people's where they stand with Kingsbury. I think overall, people are pleased with the way he's operated this season. The losses that we have, aside from Ole Miss, people as a whole are generally accepting of because of circumstances in the game, injuries, lots of penalties that, you know, some of them seemed like they were warranted, some didn't seem like they were warranted. People kind of making excuses as they go. But right now, he's definitely not on a hot seat in the way that he was at this time last year.
So let's go ahead and break down his part of the team, the offense. That is usually one of the best parts of Texas Tech. This year, they are rated number 14 S&P Plus, which Longhorn fans have painfully found out to trust because usually it knows. So
yeah,
pretty darn good in offense. Everybody knows what he does. It's the air raid, right? A lot of concepts in the passing game, a lot of routes, a lot of throwing. But he also likes to use the run game as well, but uses the pass game to set it up.
Yeah. In general, I think he's become a lot more diverse with his play calling, a lot more adaptable. That's kind of been a theme of this year, offense especially, is the adaptability of the offense to work with, you know, what the defense is giving them. He's become a lot more reliant, and we've also had a lot more depth than we used to at the running back position. So he's been able to rely on those to set up respect for the run game and forcing linebackers to kind of stay in the box, which opens up passing lanes for a quarterback. And as you know, I mean, you can't really open up a lot of passing area for Texas Tech because that's where they thrive and that's where they're, you know, that's where they're going to get you. So Kingsbury has been able to work a lot differently this year on relying on the run in order to set up that, you know, lethal pass that we have.
In the run game, what I've seen in film, there's a lot of misdirection in it. They kind of substitute some lack of running, one blocking ability to with tricking the defense in where they're going to go, kind of taking their eyes one way so that they can get a blocker somewhere and maybe they're following the wrong guy some to the other side of the field. I see a lot of them going to the outside, a lot of misdirection, and that has been a big problem for the Texans over the past 2 weeks. So what type of plays do we see in that, and what will Texas fans see on the field when it comes to that?
Who knows, right? I mean, Kingsbury's been kind of lauded as an offensive mastermind, one of them at least, when it comes to offensive schemes. The guy knows that, you know, if it's simple, it's probably boring, and if it's boring, it's not going to put a lot of points on the board. And even though we respect low-scoring games, you know, as an offensive person, he really wants to put as many on the board as possible. And a part of that is creating creative plays. And if you can trick a defense, you can get a lot of yards, or at least some. And in a running game for Texas Tech, we'll take 3 yards every play. but we're really hoping to, you know, get 15, 20, make big plays, wear out defenses. So Kingsbury is every week, he's working on new playbook schemes. He's working on new run schemes to try to you know, work around weaknesses in the opposition's defense and Texas's defense. He's certainly going to be looking for what's fooled them in the past and, you know, what are they expecting out of us? It's kind of the way that his mind works, and it's served the run game well enough thus far.
Yeah, those guys out of Texas Tech, the ones under the Mike Leach tree, those are some of the most interesting offenses to watch. A lot of Longhorn fans gave me some flack during the Oklahoma game for saying, my Lord, this offense is so creative and fun to watch. If I was an Oklahoma fan, I would be so ecstatic watching that team because it's just so much fun to watch the offense. I can imagine this year with a guy like Alan Bomer or Jet Duffy, a better quarterback than Nick Siemianek, the offense probably looks pretty darn fun to watch.
Yeah. I think there's two ways that you feel when the offense is operating. One, you feel safe, and you feel safe when Alan Bowman is behind center. Two is fun, and that's when Jet Duffy is behind center, because Duffy is the more mobile character, the guy who wants to run, the guy who wants to spin move. I mean, if he can spin move, he's certainly going to try to spin move. He loves it so much, makes for a good photo op, and he's quick as heck. So, yeah, you kind of get the sense that excitement is a part of our game, is a part of our style, because if you can get a lot of momentum with these guys, if you can get the fans involved especially, I mean, they thrive on it. So the louder the cheers, the more excited they are to go out there and do what they do. It becomes more than football. It becomes like really a game to them. And that's kind of part of Kingsbury's philosophy, is just making sure that guys have fun, because this is supposed to be a fun sport.
So talking about Jeff Duffy, though, because that's the guy who will likely start. There is Alan Bowman. He is practicing with the team, right? But he also is coming off like 8 days in the hospital over 2 weeks. So, you know, he probably can practice for an hour and still be better than Jet Duffy as a quarterback. But let's assume Jet Duffy is in there. He is sort of a liability throwing the ball, right? Unless it's a super deep ball. I have not been super impressed with what he has done throwing.
Yeah, so things that people have to remember is that Jed Duffy was coming off of an Elite 11 title when he came into Texas Tech's fold. But it's really not panned out. You know, his accreditation in college or in high school really hasn't translated to the college level, and that's because he does a lot of fundamental things wrong. He does a lot of fundamental things poorly, especially the short passes. You know, Texas Tech really thrives off of the quick five and outs, the quick curls, quick slants, you know, get the defense exhausted.
Crossing routes.
I mean, right. Anything within the 5 to 10 range, Duffy has a really hard time. And a lot of people have noticed that it's due to kind of his lack of patience. You know, he wants to get the ball out quick, so he will shirk off looking further down his reads. He really likes to get the ball out to that first read, covered by three people or open. But the antithesis of that is that when there's a long play, he's a lot better. And for some reason, he can throw a really good long ball. It's just the ones that you expect him to make, the ones that should be automatic for somebody playing at the collegiate level, right? He overthrows, he underthrows, he just doesn't throw it well enough. And it's very frustrating coming from a quarterback who a lot of other colleges would be ecstatic to have, right? Somebody who's mobile, somebody who can play the quarterback position well enough. And yet for Texas Tech, it's kind of hard with our scheme.
But the one thing that he does give y'all is those feet. And that is something Texas has had trouble with, is mobile quarterbacks. How exactly does, I want to say Ryan Gosling, Cliff Kingsbury use Jet Duffy's feet in this offense?
The best game to go to for that is TCU, when he starts as when he is a true starter of that game and he doesn't come in when Bowman is hurt. There's a lot more. So judging from the TCU game, there's a lot more run pass option. There's a lot of, you know, Kingsbury really tries to get Duffy confident early on. And he'll still implement a lot of short yardage plays for passing, you know, because the more quarterback completes passes, the more confidence he'll get. And hopefully that translates to success further down. But the thing is that his feet are always there. And that causes defenses to, you know, key up on that. So the idea is that if, you know, you got linebackers spying the quarterback, then there's a receiver open in a shallow area or hopefully like down the seam. So Kingsbury really tries to operate with that in the mindset that defenses are going to know that he's a quick dude and that any time he's very prone to just running when he doesn't see something open. He doesn't have a lot of patience, which is a downfall, but also he's very prone to making people miss and very prone to just running past people, make them look like they're standing still. It's a crazy dynamic. You'll see a lot more quarterback draw plays. For better or worse, I mean, sometimes they just blow up and you think Kingsbury's an idiot. But sometimes they really pan out and they win you the game, like at TCU. Our last touchdown was Duffy's like 35-yard quarterback draw. It just worked. So his feet are as much a blessing as they are a curse.
And how sure are we that Alan Bowman is not going to be playing? Is it?
That's a good question. Alan Bowman is one tough dude. I'll put it that way, based on, you know, what I hear from multiple sources that deal with him directly. The guy just wants to play football. He was very, very pissed that he had to come out against Oklahoma, but when you can't breathe,
he only threw
his
helmet like 20 yards. So, I mean,
right. Yeah. 25 and it would have been a 15-yard penalty, but there's a piece of me that bets that he is in Kingsbury's ear at least the whole game about letting him play. It's going to fall down on a Kingsbury's judgment because he has been released officially. Doctors have said he's good to go or he's good to get back into it, or they've said something, but he's out of the hospital and Kingsbury thought it was good enough for him to get practice in today. He'll probably go through some walkthroughs tomorrow. And then we'll see. I expect for Kingsbury to roll out Duffy as Texas is expecting, because a lot of Texas people would see Bowman's injuries as kind of detrimental to his playing time. And if I have a hunch that's ever right, I think Kingsbury will utilize that and maybe bring in Bowman later on. That might be a dumb idea, but it might be a good idea. I don't understand Bowman's condition. I don't understand how he feels. Nobody does except him. But if the guy wants to not be stubborn and he knows his body well enough, then he's good to go. He's good to go. And that's kind of how Kingsbury plays it. But we won't really know until Saturday. I can make a better judgment about whether Dakota Allen will play or not than I do with Bowman. With the quarterback.
Really?
Allen?
Yeah.
You tell me. You got somebody who played it with a broken hand last game, only went out because of a slight knee worry. It's senior night. The guy was kicked off of a team, worked hard to get back. Now he's back and he's thriving. He's kind of the key, the captain, the alpha and omega of this defense. And it's senior night against Texas, right? It's a night game. It's the last night game that he would have an opportunity to play at. So either the guy's tough himself. If I were him, I would be like itching to play. I would be saying anything, trying anything, rehabbing all day, all night, anything I could do to get back on the field for that last night game against Texas. It's sentimental, especially on senior night. But again, don't know how serious the hand is. Don't know how serious, you know, that knee injury was. Speculation is that it really wasn't. They're just keeping him out for procedural purposes, but I don't know, man. If it were me, I'd be in there.
So back to Alan Bowman, though, with him in there, what is Texas going to see different than what they see with Jet Duffy?
Good passing. A lot more efficient. The offensive line has an easier time, I'll say, whenever Bowman is in than when Duffy is in, and that's saying something, but Duffy really works outside of the pocket. He always seems to be running away, and that really exhausts the linemen. One thing that Bowman does better, not best, is, you know, staying in that allotted area behind the linemen where he has some, you know, ability to go through all of his reads.
Working through the pocket.
Yeah. So, like, the ability for him to go through multiple reads, you know, Texas Tech's wide receivers are good enough that there's going to be somebody open every play. If they're not, then that's a good defense, Iowa State. But usually, 9 times out of 10, somebody's open. Even if it's Antoine Wesley with 2 guys on him, he's the tallest dude out there, it seems. And there's just somebody open for Bowman always, it feels like. He's got that sight, and he's got the patience to make a play happen. He's also got the efficiency, right? The guy does not miss very often unless he's making a foolish freshman mistake, but he can lock down on those very short yardage plays that Duffy doesn't. So something that Kingsbury has been enjoying in our best wins, we have been effective in doing short yardage plays all the way down the field, scoring slowly and having a lot of time of possession so that our defense is more rested and able to keep opposing offenses off the board easier. So when Bowman's in, we have a more smooth game plan. And when Duffy's in, it's kind of sporadic. You don't know what you're going to get.
So let's go ahead and talk about those wide receivers, though, because Texas Tech has a pretty good trio with Antoine Wesley, TJ Vasher, and Jadeon High. Is that how you say it?
Yeah, Jadeon High.
Jadeon High. There we go. Antoine Wesley, 6'5". What?
Antoine.
Antoine Wesley, 6'5". TJ Vasher, 6'6". Those two dudes, like basketball forwards, are the ones that get the toss-up balls. And if those two guys are covered, right, it's Jadeon High, right?
Yep.
That's what I saw.
Yeah, I think Texas fans are familiar with TJ Vasher. His one-handed catch back in Austin last year is insane. You know, it's poster-worthy. And he did the same thing at Ole Miss. I mean, he was all over social media, right? He's out here making OBJ look, normal. So yeah, TJ Vasher was kind of our solid wide receiver coming back. There was a lot of discussion about, you know, how do we operate when we've lost so many people on the offense, and people that have come out and starred in replacing missing pieces, people like Antoine Wesley, who at this far has had 1,176.75 receiving yards. Jadeon High has been, sometimes he's a miss, and then sometimes he's really clutch and has proved to be kind of a possession guy that if we're third and long or whatever, he can, you know, he's got the ball. But, you know, all eyes on Antoine Wesley, especially the guy, for as lanky as he is and for as goofy as he is personally, he definitely has a knack for catching the ball over you, behind you, under you, on his fingertips. The guy has just been impressive all around. He's definitely raising some heads nationally.
So then the running backs, Tajon Henry has been the guy who's kind of come in 5'7", not a lot of people really gave him a second look after they saw his height, but Texas Tech did because they usually get those guys who are just not a traditional fit. He was a teammate with Anthony Cook, Alvante Woodard, those guys over in Lamar Houston this year coming as a freshman. He's been doing pretty darn well for himself.
Yeah, so Tajon Henry, again, at the beginning of this year, everybody was leaning on Dalion Ward. He was still healing at the point of the beginning of the season, so we had a lot of Trey King plays, and Trey King was shining in his own right. But then Tajon Henry comes on, he's an absolute workhorse, right? He's been a sensation for this running game. I think something that's been effective is Kingsbury's efforts in rotating running backs, keeping them fresh, keeping them ready to go, because like you said, this is a very untraditional offensive play style, offensive position placing. We're very happy to take the people that nobody expects anything of, people like Jakeem Grant, people like, you know, you name it. We just go after the people that nobody maybe has faith in, and giving those kids that opportunity to shine, you really find the guys who just want to be there. So he's really proved himself by working hard, by earning yards, and by having an incredible vision that, you know, we're not accustomed to, and it's been really effective.
Has Dalion gotten all healed up? Because he looks more like the pinball type of back that I've seen Texas have a lot of trouble with, rather than the more shifty, quick back, which Texas seems to do pretty well with.
Right, so Dalion Ward, and you hit it on the head. I mean, he's a pinball kind of guy. He loves contact. He definitely doesn't shirk away from it. I think one of his ambitions is to see if he can get that yards after first contact, make, you know, kind of set his own records there. The guy just loves contact, and it really shows up. He's a hard runner, and the way that Tajon is able to move around easily, I mean, it seems like every step he takes, he's like jamming into the field. So it's something that's, you're right, he's very effective at, you know, just running straight. He knows where the end zone is, and he's going to get there, kind of thing.
And then the offensive line. We all know that with a Texas Tech offensive line under Cliff Kingsbury or under Leachtree, you're going to have good pass blockers, kind of iffy run blocking. What does this offensive line look like? I know you have Jack Anderson, who's probably you're one of y'all's highest recruits in quite a while to go to Lubbock. What is this offensive line looking like this year?
Experienced, and they're looking comfortable with each other, I'd say. They're definitely a closer cohort than they have ever been in my time at Texas Tech and since back to the Leach days. Kind of reminiscent of good old-fashioned Texas Tech ball. Awareness, camaraderie, I guess, but their ability to adjust, especially. Defenses are in the Big 12 are wide-ranging. You have all different kinds, it seems like, these days. But the way for them to operate together most effectively is communication. That's something that they've done this year that maybe they haven't done so well in the past. Pass blocking certainly is great, and we're really appreciative of it, especially with people like Alan Bowman and, God forbid, Jed Duffy behind. They need all the help they can get from really experienced people. And Jack Anderson has brought kind of an energy to this team that, you know, maybe wasn't seen before him. So it's been exciting to see how effective they've been thus far through the season. And the run blocking, I would say, is getting a little bit better. And that's also a part, and we can go back to why is there so many misdirections. Any way you can help out a team that's not very good at something is helping, you know, take any kind of pressure off as you can. If you make them seem like they're run blocking to the right and everybody goes right, they're not worried about, okay, well, did we defend the right well? Because he's going to the left anyway. So, you know, taking off any responsibility they can has helped them kind of become more effective in that run game. But it's still, you know, we're not a run heavy team, and we're not going to be an efficient run heavy team anytime soon, just because it's not their style, man. You know, pass blocking all day.
So if you're Todd Orlando and you're in control of Texas, what do you do to take advantage of what Texas Tech does poorly?
Whoa, man, watch the Iowa State game. The multiplicity of Kingsbury's offensive schemes has always befounded me, but I think that Iowa State did very well kind of having this cloud coverage, as well as a shifty front line and linebacker combination, the way that they just would move and show different looks. You know, they'd be lined up kind of off staggered to the left, and then they'd switch up back center, just doing anything you can to, because these offensive linemen for Tech, I think one thing that comes with the job being at Texas Tech is being able to, you know, think on your feet and operate in a system that there's a number of plays and a number of run blocking schemes, a number of pass blocking schemes, a number of things you have to remember. So offering some kind of mystifying X factor to that, the way that Iowa State did, is most effective in tripping up these guys, because they do have a lot to remember. It's definitely a mind game for the linemen. So any way you can get in that is important. From the defensive side, or from like the defensive backside, man coverage is difficult. And if Jet Duffy comes out, man coverage is going to be the downfall of this team. If you're playing some kind of zone coverage, it may be ineffective, or it may not even matter if Jet's in there, but like if Bowman was in there, any kind of zone coverage, if you're leaving space for him to throw, there's going to be a completion. And like I said, we're happy with taking those 3-5 yard pass plays every play. If it takes up the whole time, it gets to the end. But, you know, Orlando really needs to kind of keep in mind that if Duffy is playing, Duffy's a very, I'm not going to say immature, but he's not really refined at the position, in the fact that he's not as calm and collected in the pocket as somebody like Bowman is. So having somebody as spy Duffy is critical for this game. I think if Orlando wants to have any kind of real success, having somebody who's watching the whole time, because it's more than likely there's going to be some plays that seem like they're breaking down, and Duffy's not going to give him an option. He's just going to go ahead and run and try to get a couple yards with his feet. And just having a simple quarterback spy, you can blow that up easy. So there's a number of things that Orlando could be doing. But if I had to say one thing, I'd just like make sure you have a spy. Because the way that I think Texas' defensive line is experienced enough to kind of sniff out these run plays that Texas Tech's going to certainly try. And if you can take away the run game, yeah, Orlando only needs to put up one or maybe two quarterback spies, and then Duffy's night is over, in my opinion.
Yeah, but if you're Texas, you have to pick your poison between either Anthony Wheeler or Gary Johnson, and who's on the spy and who's going to be in pass coverage or dealing with the run and gap protection. You know, Wheeler's had a lot of trouble this year, and Gary Johnson's the guy who can do it all usually, so pick your poison there. But I completely agree with you have to spy Jet Duffy because you have to be able to contain the quarterback, and you really can't do that with both of your defensive ends inside the offensive tackles at the 4-I position. On top of that, you have to be able to force Jet Duffy to throw the ball efficiently. You're talking about he's having trouble with the intermediate, the short passes. Texas has had a lot of problems getting beat deep. This game, they cannot afford to give Jet Duffy the deep ball. If they do, then that's going to be the downfall of Texas. What they need to do is they need to be able to keep everything in front of them, make him take the intermediate shots, make him fire underneath, and then if he does hit, then go and rally to the ball. Texas has done well doing that. It's just getting beat deep. And that's what I'm a little afraid of, that man coverage, because in that Texas has had some trouble, especially with double moves. But I do agree, cover two over top with man coverage underneath would probably be Texas's best bet here. On the run side of things, because Texas has had quite a bit of trouble there. And, you know, just in general, though, no more delayed blitzes from Texas. Texas has been doing this delayed blitz from the second and third level, and Texas Tech will eat that alive. And it's not good in the first place. Like, those blitzes are just bad, and they've been pretty much the reason Texas can't get any pass rush. But on third downs, you got to get immediate pass rush. You cannot get those delayed blitzes, because if you do, then it's going to leave a zone open where Jet Duffy or Alan Bowman is just going to pick you apart.
Absolutely. The delayed blitz as a general defensive scheme, I mean, there's quarterbacks that it'll work for, but 90% of the time, it's usually not good.
Yeah.
The way the offenses, especially in the Big 12, man, there's just no place for it. You just can't take your time trying to set up some kind of defensive chess match with somebody who's just ready to throw it on a hot route as soon as somebody, you know, comes over. Like, it's no place in the Big 12, that's for sure.
It's maybe like the Big cinnamon. 10. It's like cinnamon. It's good use at the right time with the right thing at the right moment and in sort of a small amount. But if you overdo cinnamon, you're going to choke and kill yourself.
Yeah, exactly.
So there's that I believe Texas. Also, just in general with the linebackers, the linebacker play for Texas has been so bad this year. That given Tech and all this misdirection in not just the run game, but the pass game, give the linebackers simple tasks.
Right.
You know, dumb down the plays. They're not stupid guys, but, you know, dumb down the plays for the linebackers so that they understand what's going and they know where they need to gap, where they need to contain the gaps and where they need to be in pass protection so that they don't get beat by simple misdirections or just not being in the right spot at the right time.
Right. I mean, you know that there's going to be some tricky plays coming. So keeping it as simple as possible, what is it? KISS. Keep it simple, stupid. I mean, the easier you can keep it on the defense, if everybody just does their job, should be fine. But yeah, with the way that Kingsbury loves to trick them up, who knows what's going to happen, man. I'm excited.
Yeah. And then the last thing I think for Texas is, and I, you know, what I've seen from the wide receivers for Tech is, they don't do well with physicality. They're big, tall dudes, but they're very skinny. They're like long string beans. So if you can get up in their face and be physical, which I think Chris Boyd can definitely do, then I think Texas can have some success against a guy like Antoine Wesley. Is that right? Did I say that correctly?
Yeah, you got it.
All right, cool. So because it's pretty much very similar to what they saw out of David Sills. A big guy who makes his money basically bullying smaller dudes. You can't do that with Chris Boyd. So put him on Antoine Wesley and bully Antoine Wesley right back. So,
sure. I think that, you know, that's important. Out of TJ Vasher and Antoine Wesley, I think you'd rather bully Vasher than Wesley. Wesley as small and as string bean as he is, the guy is a fighter. He's not afraid to be tugging at cornerbacks. He's not afraid to be in their face. You know, the guy's a goofball, give him that, but he definitely sticks up for his lankiness. So getting somebody on Vasher definitely has had problems in the past, especially this season, with very aggressive defensive backs, getting him off his routes or otherwise. He has not had the ability to kind of bounce back in the way that maybe Wesley has, which it shows because Wesley has a lot more yardage and a lot more efficiency in receptions than Vasher does.
So then let's go to the part that has given Texas Tech fans so many headaches over the past 30 years. I don't know. How long has Leach been there? Was Leach there? And then now Cliff Kingsbury? I don't even know. But the defense. David Gibbs is now your defensive coordinator. He's done better with the team. He's improved the defense, but they're still 88th in defensive S&P plus. So they're kind of just below average there. But it's still good enough for Texas Tech. What is David Gibbs doing at Texas Tech? What's the philosophy there, and how is it working out?
So this is the thing that numbers have a hard time showing, and I'm thankful, I guess, for that, is that Gibbs is very much – Castle Gibbs is fortified by the idea about Castle bending Gibbs, but not breaking. I mean, you can't – if we give up a lot of yards, but red zone defense, third down defense especially, has been really effective this year. Keeping points off the board or minimizing points – is really Gibbs' philosophy, that and turnovers. We certainly don't have as many turnovers as we did last season, but he really is into turnovers, especially with the way that our offense works about putting up, you know, many points as they have been, putting up points, as many points as we can, getting one or two turnovers a game and capitalizing on it. As long as we're effective enough to get more points than the other team, that's all that matters.
Right. You know, this, the this offense you not, have, you can get them the ball, then they're going to make something with it.
Right, and this is not a team that really cares about where we rank on this or that. You know, we've grown accustomed to people saying we're bad on defense and people expecting us to be bad on defense. You know, who cares? And then people expecting us to throw the ball all the time. Don't care what people think about us anymore. Don't know, not sure if we ever really did. But, yeah, things, especially on the defense, that have changed dramatically are the ability to maintain – grit throughout the game. Multiple games this year especially, Texas Tech doubles down in the second half. I wish I had the numbers up in front of me. We have held teams to very minimal points in the second half all season. It's been the adjustments by Gibbs, the effort by all the defensive players behind the voices of people like Deshaun Johnson, behind Dakota Allen. This is very critical for this kind of defensive scheme of, you know, bending and not breaking, because the game is going to get wild. There's going to be times where you think it's all over and you come back and then it's all back in the mess. I mean, even against Oklahoma last week, Texas Tech loses Alan Bowman at halftime due to kind of a flare up of this collapsed lung issue. Jed Duffy comes in. He's the bane of Texas Tech, and but also the savior at times. And the defense stays strong. They were giving up a lot to Kyler Murray early on. It's difficult. But in the second half, they really doubled down and they gave Duffy a lot of opportunities to get Texas Tech back and put Texas Tech ahead. He was just unable to capitalize on that. So we become actually very confident and reliant on this team's ability to answer the call. There hasn't been games this year where I've kind of looked at the defense and been, you know, what the hell? You can see they have a lot of effort, and if they're not showing effort, it changes the next series, because Gibbs and all that defensive staff are down there getting in their face, and they're talking to each other and they're working on schemes and they're figuring out, okay, what is the offense doing? How do we stop it? And they key in. This is incredibly important, I think, with defenses that are not relying on talent, but they're relying on teamwork and they're relying on practice and hard work to kind of make their identity known. So Texas Tech has done a very good job at staying out of the national radar, but certainly warming themselves to Texas Tech fans' sentiments and earning that confidence back that we can and we will make key stops in games.
Yeah, and that's kind of what the Big 12 is all about, what Texas has failed to do in the past 2 weeks is make a stop. They are, over the past 2 weeks, one stop away in two games from being, 9-1, 8-1. So in the Big 12, there's going to be a lot of scoring, but it's all about making the stops at the right time and making, you know, enough stops. That's what you need. You don't need to stop them every time. You don't need to be Big 10 and stop them, you know, 70, 80% of the time. You just need to make the correct stops and the stops, you know, enough. So let's go to the who of Texas Tech's defense. Who are we going to be seeing out there? And the defensive line. When I've seen the defensive line on film, I wasn't all too impressed, but they do have some, you know, seniority with Eli Howard, the UNT transfer, and Preston Gordon, the Rice transfer, but I'm still not that impressed with that defensive line for Texas Tech.
Right, and there really is no reason to be. Losing Mikaelion Thomas to the Jets, just losing into the draft, certainly took a chunk out of our run defense and chunk out of that defensive line strength, because the man was massive and agile, and it was pretty cool. Right, something that Texas Tech really enjoyed having on the defensive line. And people expected Eli Howard to come in and kind of fill that void. And something that Eli Howard doesn't offer is the size necessarily, but something he does offer better than Big Mike did was the agility. He's quick, but oftentimes if the offensive line is good for the other team, then he's not quick enough. You know, if they have good run blocking schemes, he falls victim to it. But again, this is a defense that kind of predicates itself off of teamwork over singular talent. So just because, you know, Eli Howard isn't in there every single play, you know, you got people behind him, Rico Jeffers, Dakota Allen, kind of filling in that spot. So we don't have kind of the star-studded talent as some other teams do, but it's been really effective with being there for each other more so.
Yeah.
But that's something that Texas Tech does suffer with.
And that makes sense. I say that because I haven't seen a lot of pass rushing ability, especially not against teams that have, you know, decent offensive lines. But what they do have is the linebackers. The linebacking room for Texas Tech is pretty strong, and Dakota Allen is definitely a part of that. He's probably not going to be slowed down too much by having a big club on his hand. When I play with a club on my hand, I actually played better. So, in football, I don't know what that says about me as a football player, but you know, Dakota Allen out there is probably one of the best linebackers in the Big 12, and the guys behind him, Jordan Brooks, Rico Jeffers, all of those guys, they are pretty darn good as well. So you know, what they lack in the defensive line, in the run game, they make up for it with their linebackers.
Absolutely. This is a linebacking core that is built around the weight room. These guys are monsters. They love the physicality of the sport. They want to be on every play. God forbid you actually run the ball, because that's the stuff they love, right? So with Dakota Allen being questionable for this game, and which I think he will play if he has any say in it. Rico Jeffers and Jordy Brooks especially, good Lord. Those guys love to make big hits. Those guys love to be up on the line. As soon as the ball is snapped, something they've been very effective at this year is, you know, being in the film room, you know, getting the intelligence beforehand, kind of having the awareness of the opposing offenses that they're going up against, and sniffing out run plays and like being there, you know, the ball snapped and they're just essentially another part of the defensive line because they've already made the decision to run up. It's been very effective in their responsibility to the position, as well as their athleticism and their reliance on, you know, strength and conditioning to kind of keep them throughout the game.
Oh, there's Texas Tech. I want to look up something real fast. See if this, not very good at keeping the explosives downs on passing downs.
Yeah.
So it's a passing game that's an issue.
Right.
Well, also the rushing is not great either.
Yeah. Here we are again. The numbers just don't tell the story that people who have to watch Tech all year
have to watch.
See. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So then let's talk about the defensive backs though, because what I saw was some iffy numbers. You give up a lot of explosive plays. Although I've seen some guys on there whose names I know are good. Justice Parker, Vontae Dorsey, Deshaun Johnson. Deshaun Johnson, pretty good in the run game. Justice Parker, a great nickelback. Will have his hands full with little Jordan Humphrey. And Vontae Dorsey, back in that safety, trying to keep everything down. But it's the cornerbacks, the bigger dudes, 6'6", 6'2", around 210 pounds. Those guys are the ones who have trouble.
Yes. I'm trying to – I had something for this because I figured it would come up. So as a whole, they're sporadic. I guess that's the best way I can put it is that they're sporadic. Something that we've allowed too much of is efficient passing. But again, you have to remember where Texas Tech is coming from. The ability to stop passes at all anymore is pretty nice. But people like Vontae Dorsey and Fry and who else is out there? Their names escape me because they're not memorable, right? This has been a part of the defense that kind of creates the larger image of Texas Tech. Something that they've done well is this third down efficiency. I think before the Oklahoma game was pretty dang good. Being able to stick with receivers is efficient, but they also at the same time on deep balls, especially they make a lot. They have a lot of penalties. They have a lot of issues with getting their head around. There's too many pass interference calls. There's too many blown coverages with this squad. And a part of it, you can give up to, you know, inexperience. Some of these guys are playing the position for the first time on this Texas Tech defense, and they're just trying to get it all figured out in a conference where, you know, so much passing happens. Yeah, they just have too many problems for my taste. But at the same time, like last game, we had Vontae Dorsey make huge, huge interceptions against Kyler Murray. And then huge hits, whether blown coverage or not, is able to make up for it. So the tackling that their ability to tackle at all is kind of a step up from where we were. But they still are having a lot of issues in pass coverages.
Right. It seems to be either boom or bust for them, where very much like Texas, it's an interception or it's a 60-yard pass.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, exactly.
So that's what you can expect out of Texas Tech here is it's either they do very, very well, which is very nice for Texas Tech fans, or it's what Texas Tech fans are usually used to.
Right. So yeah. And a lot of it depends on quarterback play from the other team. There's no way that Tech gets out of here with a clean sheet. Defensively, and not in a statistic point, but in a way that, you know, David Gibbs could walk into the film room the next time and go, that was great defense. You know, there's always going to be something with this team that they didn't do. There's always going to be mistakes that they make just because it's kind of our brand. It's how we do things around here. It's how we do things around here. But, you know, a lot of it comes on quarterbacks making mistakes. And again, this is a team that really thrives on momentum, that thrives on, you know, love of the game, the crowd noise. If you can keep the crowd out of it, if you can keep killing momentum, they'll eventually beat themselves. But more likely than not, it's the boom and bust. It's big plays or it's an interception, and you just don't know.
Right. So if you're Tom Herman and you're trying to figure out how you best David Gibbs, what are you doing?
So I don't know. Okay, say we don't have Dakota Allen. Say he makes a mature choice and sits out. We have everybody else. But what that spells for me in my mind is some concern with the run game. Like we've said, you know, this defensive line for Texas Tech is not the most proficient run-stopping team. They rely heavily on the ability of the linebackers to understand their assignments to make efficient plays and kind of back them up in certain scenarios. So I think Tom Herman really needs to understand that and utilize running backs often, as often as he can, and as often as the defense allows him. And when our defense over adjusts for a really proficient run game, pass it deep, man. Make the cornerbacks work because they'll fall asleep out there, and it'll be better. It'll be a more of a bust chance if you're kind of keeping the defensive backs negated from the plays, and then all of a sudden you just dunk it, right? Dinking and dunking. I think it's an effective against and relatively inexperienced defenses. It's an effective mode of operation. So if you're Tom Herman, I think you got to get what you can get and key in on where the weaknesses are in the defense. And I think that's going to come, especially in the run game.
Right. But as you said, Texas Tech really vibes with momentum. Texas is very, as we've seen against Oklahoma, very susceptible to the wave of momentum, whether good or bad. Yeah. And Texas cannot afford to waste possessions early here. And that comes with trying out, testing run plays. So what I'm thinking Texas needs out of this game is not a tentative game plan play calling wise. They need to know where they have advantages in different situations, or they need to make them. They cannot try to test out, do we have an advantage here? So I agree, they do need to attack the run game. They need to know where the weak spots in the defensive line are and attack those. And there can't be any of those plays where they're trying to figure out, okay, is this going to work? So I'm thinking there you use something like what Iowa State did very often, which is the RPO, a true RPO, which Texas did quite a bit last week against West Virginia, kind of showcasing it for really, you know, really putting into their game plan for the first time last week. So with that working very well against Iowa State, I think that's a good way to get the run game started so that you're not having wasted possessions early or wasted runs early against this team. But on top of that, you have to use Ellinger's feet on with it, because with Ellinger's feet, it opens up the game plan for Texas. It really does.
Yeah, and that's something you can notice from the Iowa State game for Tech, is that Purdy, his ability to make a play with his feet caused some grief on the defensive side. But the RPO is definitely formation, or is a weaker play scheme that Texas Tech is not accustomed to playing, despite, you know, playing against very good quarterbacks who can run it well. So our inexperience with that as a whole is also our greatest downfall. So I think that's a smart commentary there. I will say kind of an X factor is special teams on this, and Dominic Panizzolo, Texas Tech's punter, has been very effective at pinning people deep in their own, in their own 10, at their own 5, at their own 2, at times against Oklahoma last week. And when you're that close, having that run-pass option may be detrimental. But we'll see. We'll really see.
Yeah, and again, I think if you can make an impact on the ground with Sam Ellinger and keep the Texas Tech back 7 wary, then Texas is opening up not just the run game, but their pass game as well, which, as you said, they need to use quite a bit on the intermediate routes. I don't think you do so many short routes here, but I would like to see from Texas crossing routes and deep routes. Take shots to little Jordan Humphrey. I'm not sure Colin Johnson's going to be in the game, but when little Jordan Humphrey's in there, take shots. We saw against West Virginia.
Excellent. Yeah.
We saw what he did against West Virginia. You know what he's capable of. If you can just give little Jordan Humphrey a good ball like Sam Ellinger can do, especially against a defensive line like this, which has shown to have trouble getting to the quarterback, like Texas, then you have a money play right there. And make use of Devin Duvernay, distribute the ball well. Use your running backs in the pass game for sure. Wheel routes out of the backfield, because without Colin Johnson in this game, potentially, then you're got to figure out some way to make up for the lack of wide receiver talent. Ellinger has to be on his A game here. Cannot do turnovers, cannot have turnovers against Texas Tech, can, again, not afford wasted possessions. And with Texas Tech, you know, their main goal of getting to turn you over, if Sam can extend his streak, then I think Texas is in a good spot. But it's just going to be Sam Ellinger having to make plays and prove that he can be the quarterback that he is showing he can be.
Yeah, I saw a rather audacious article today that Sam Ellinger will win a Heisman before he leaves Texas.
I think that was called just an optimist. It was like, we're going to be super freaking optimistic here. But yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. And not that I'm opposed to the idea. I think he's got a lot of grit. Something I really appreciate about Ellinger is his ability to fight and avoid mental, relatively kind of avoid mental breakdown. That guy, he's there for the full four quarters.
He did it all last year. So he's well versed in avoiding it now.
Yeah. Yeah, adversity births strength. So I think that, yeah, his A game needs to be on because despite Texas Tech, and this is something I wrote about in one of my articles recently, is that despite the records, despite the hype, despite the non-hype, despite the hot seats, despite everything, this Texas Tech versus Texas game always has proven to be wild in some
form or fashion. Especially at night,
right? It's a night game in Lubbock. Fans are excited about it again. Expect a big turnout. The thing that will or will not be the ultimate changer in this game is the first quarter, I think. Because last week, you know, Kyler Murray, a very efficient quarterback, a very effective quarterback, an absolute freak of an athlete, you know, throws in two offensive possessions, throws two interceptions, and Texas Tech is rolling. And the fact that we lost Alan Bowman, you know, kind of lost the momentum, and then, you know, whatever
Texas
happened.
Texas fans were upset about that one.
Which one?
Alan Bowman going down, because y'all were going to beat Oklahoma.
Yeah, no, that, well, the consensus is, I'm not going to say whether or not, because I don't know.
The
right?
Colt McCoy in Alabama argument.
Yeah, exactly.
The Alan Bowman Oklahoma argument.
You just don't know. You think could have, but you don't know. But yeah, so Ellinger being on his A game is crucial to this, as well as kind of the cards falling the right way. It's just an exciting game that, you know, we'll see how it shapes out. If everybody's on their A game, it's 50-50. But we'll see who comes ready to play. I expect Ellinger, especially after last week, with the way that that game ended and the way that he kind of initially reacted to it, I expect Ellinger to come out kind of with a chip on his shoulder about, okay, Texas Tech came into Austin last year. They beat us. How are we going to respond? And the best way to do it is to show up in a night game in Lubbock and, you know, take them out early. So I expect them to come out pretty fired up.
Good to know. Well, Jeremy, thank you again for hanging out with me. Do you mind letting everybody know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your writings?
Yeah, if you're interested, you can find me on Twitter at Jeremy Dane. It's Jeremey Dane, like the dog. And then just go ahead and pop on over to VivaTheMatadors.com, SB Nation affiliate, and you can find some of my work and the work of my colleagues.
The best Texas Tech SB Nation blog on the internet.
Absolutely. There's no competition. No. There's all kinds of competition that maybe doesn't exist. But yeah, we're the best.
But on that note, thank you again, Jeremy, for hanging out with me. And
always a pleasure, man. Thanks much.
And thank you, the listener, for hanging out with us and listening to the show. That'll be your 4th and 5. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. Or you guys can find our other shows on the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, thank you all for listening. We'll see y'all next week. Hook 'em.